This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It is not news until Tom Withers of the Associated Press says so, and Tom Withers is now on the hotline. Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Good. Did you ever get those cards printed up yet? You should.
I have not.
It's not news till I say so.
You know, and with all this downtime, you would think a guy like me would have that done by now. Not so.
I'm smelling T-shirts, too. I'm thinking a whole marketing campaign for this. Although, that goes against the Associated Press, though.
It kind of does, but at this point, we're all reinventing ourselves, so I think all the rules are right out the window.
Hey, Tom, so we've all been watching this Jordan documentary, and...
Jordan documentary? What are you talking about?
I'm sorry. The Last Dance. The Bulls documentary.
Cameron Jordan documentary.
Or was it Jordan Cameron? Who did we call? I can't remember. So we're all watching this, and I thought of you, and we all thought of you when they started showing stuff from the Barcelona Olympics, and I got to tell you, one of the most fascinating parts was just watching practice film of that dream team going head-to-head. What just kind of walk us through that experience from your perspective and what that was like to cover that team.
Yeah, it was something else, and I've talked about this before, I think, with you guys. It's probably, it was fairly early in my career, but it's probably going to be the greatest moment of my career in just in terms of being around a team that there will never be another team like it, at least in our lifetimes, right? I mean, this was a team that the NBA assembled because they were tired of seeing U.S. basketball trashed on an international, and USA Basketball wanted to get the Americans, back on top of that game, and so they assembled this team. And, when you think about, Michael was one thing, but when you think that, Magic and Bird on the same team, the two guys that really took the NBA to another level, and then you sprinkle in, another seven or eight or nine Hall of Famers, whatever it is, including, giant personalities like Charles Barkley, and Chuck Daly as the coach, and Mike Krzyzewski as an assistant. It was remarkable. So, the thing that I likened it to guys immediately after the game was, it was as if they had, brought the Beatles back together to teach the world how to sing, was kind of the analogy I used. It was really a moment where, the whole world was just galvanized by this team, and they really were treated like the Beatles over in Spain, where every move they made was just accompanied by, thousands of people, whether it was chasing the team bus or waiting outside the practice facility or giving up all the money they had to try to get in to see one of their games in Badalona. So it was really remarkable, something I'll never forget.
Jordan clearly became the guy on that team, Tom, and that solidified his place, I think, amongst those guys. And in listening to that scrimmage tape, which I had never seen before, I don't know if anybody has, but that was phenomenal. When he yelled at Magic and said, "Hey, this is the 90s," I thought, "Wait a minute, you're on the floor with Magic and Larry and some of these other guys who made their hay in the 80s." And you're throwing it in their face that they're old and that their era is gone and you're right. The man? And Magic even said, "What do you mean by that?" And I thought, you know what he means by that.
Exactly.
You
don't have to, get out of the way, old man.
That was weird.
That was at a time when, Bird was at the very end. He barely played. People forget, too. He barely played in those Olympics.
He was laying down, Tom, because of his back, right? Remember, he was laying down on the ground all the time?
Right, right. And in fact, I'm not even sure if he appeared in the gold medal game. And then, you know, this is when Magic had just tested positive for HIV as well, and that was a whole other issue that people forget about at that time. So, you know, as we all went over there as American journalists, and there were probably about, I guess there were about 10 or 12 of us that were kind of encamped with the team on a daily basis. You know, everybody early on in the games was waiting for kind of the moment when Michael would become Michael, and kind of the, as Brian McIntyre from the NBA said, you know, during the documentary, the alpha of the alphas. And it happened, you know, kind of organically too, though, Jeff and Andy. You know, they, again, you know, Magic and Larry deferred to him in many ways, but you also remember, you got to remember too, there were guys like, you know, Patrick Ewing and David Robinson were on that team, you know, very highly regarded, you know, captains of their teams in the NBA, but it became pretty clear to everyone that Michael was the man. And, you know, as Michael said early in the documentary the other night, that he always let his game speak for itself. You know, he let his game dictate where everything else would go. And, you know, that's something, guys, that we've heard around here from LeBron for years, was that, you know, I can't worry about all the other stuff. As long as I take care of the basketball, everything else will fall into place. So, yeah, you just saw Michael's ascension, you know, from the opening ceremonies right through that gold medal game and the ceremony afterwards, that was Michael's team. There was no doubt about it.
Tom, when he said that, I thought he said Rod Thorne called him, and he said, well, who's on the team? And clearly, he wanted Christian Laettner on the team over Shaquille O'Neal. But
he just didn't want anything to do with Isaiah. That was the biggest you know, that was kind of an unwritten story at the time. I mean, those two despised each other, and you know, that was chronicled pretty well in a previous episode or two, that there was just an absolute disdain between Michael and Isaiah, because let's be honest, you know, Isaiah belonged on that team just from a talent standpoint. You know, he was arguably probably one of the five best players in the league at that point, and you know, that's taking nothing away from John Stockton, who was a tremendous player and, you know, Hall of Famer in his own right. But Isaiah, you know, Isaiah belonged in that first five, and Michael wasn't having anything to do with it.
So were you buying when they said that, though, when he said, well, it wasn't just me, I wasn't the only one?
Yeah, that's kind of I think that's a lot of guys, too, you know, trying to have Michael's back on this a little bit. But it was first and foremost a problem between those two. And then I think, you know, over time, guys have kind of sided toward. Listen, Isaiah was not well liked by a lot of guys across the league. I mean, you guys remember him as a player. Right. You know, he was always chirping. He was always talking. You know, he had some of that. He had some of that killer instinct that Michael's got and LeBron's got and Kobe had. So, you know, he got under people's skins, and you know, he could score 20 points in a quarter and trash talk his way to every single point. So he wasn't well liked. But I think over time, Andy, to your question, is that I think a lot of guys have just decided to move over to the Michael side of the argument and say that they had his back all along. But as we've talked about, it was all about Michael versus Isaiah.
One thing, Tom, in this documentary that surprised me a little bit, and I was not aware of it, man, were they all over Jerry Krause all the time. And I thought, I can't imagine the Cavs treating Wayne Embry that way. or any other team treating basically their boss that way. It was unbelievable.
It was. That was really bad, right? I mean, even when they won the championship, you had Michael taking shots at Krause about not smoking cigars because it would stunt his growth and things like that, right? Because I guess, you know, Jerry in many ways too, from a physical standpoint, was kind of an easy target, right? Kind of, you know, short, fat, frumpy guy that, you know, easily, you know, picked on. And I guess they talked about that early on, that he was the kid in school that was kind of always being bullied. And I think that continued even as he was the GM. Let's not forget, too, though, you know, Jeff, let's not forget, too, that, you know, he was outspoken as well, right? And he was also, you know, the one that was responsible for potentially, and what ended up happening is dismantling one of the best NBA teams that's ever been assembled. So, you know, and listen, they, you know, Scotty and Michael did not hold back against him. And you know, once Scotty and Michael felt like they could get away with it, I think everybody else on the team felt like they could just take pot shots at him. So, you know, again, I think he was an easy target, and he was just in a very tough spot where, you know, he was, you know, having to try to assemble this team that had, you know, terrific players, and you got to be careful about the money that you were spending of Jerry Reinsdorf's and what have you. So, yeah, he was a poor Jerry, man. He took some shots, didn't he?
Yep.
Tom, as a guy that also covered LeBron James as long as you did too, and still do, I kind of feel like in watching this documentary that this was kind of a manual for LeBron James and his career. And,
for sure.
You know, I'll go back even to the thought of Michael Jordan picking a marketing guy that was working with golf and tennis guys.
For sure.
And saying, and so then you watch that and you see that with, I mean, I just, everything, I don't know why, maybe just because we're from here and we covered LeBron, and LeBron just means, I mean, still means something to all of us here. I watch this and I keep thinking, man, LeBron probably learned from that. LeBron learned from that. LeBron had a lesson here. The biggest difference to me just seems to be the power that LeBron was able to,
right,
to have compared to Jordan. And I think, and I don't know if Jordan, what kind of power would Jordan have had if he just said, I don't care about management and I'm just going to do what I want to do.
Like, right. I can't, well, he was, Jordan, as you know, Andy, I mean, you know, Michael did it all. He was the first to do all of this, right? I mean, he was the first,
right,
one to, you know, to decide to have his own shoe line with Nike. And they kind of walked us through that the other night. So to your point, yeah, I mean, if not Michael, there's no Kobe. If not Kobe, there's no LeBron. And I agree with you. I think those superstars learn from the lessons and the mistakes and the correct moves that Michael made back in the 80s and 90s. This was all very new. You know, Michael took what Magic and Larry were able to do with Converse to another level. And David Falk was smart enough to seize upon, you know, Michael and his image and his phenomenal skill level to take that thing to places where none of us ever dreamed it was going. And then, you know, fast forward that 25 years or so to an 18-year-old from Akron, Ohio, who everybody believed had the potential to be one of the top five players in the history of the game. And LeBron and his group, you know, took advantage of that and got a $90 million sneaker contract before he graduated from St. Vincent St. Mary's. So, yeah, it just exploded. And if not for Michael, you know, none of this starts. And I think, you know, even Kobe mentioned that the other night, too, in those remarks, is that, you know, Michael begat Kobe, begat LeBron, and then we go from there. And I'm sure 20 years from now, guys, or maybe sooner than that, there's going to be this next guy that comes along, and we're going to call him the next Michael or the next LeBron or the next Kobe or whatever the case may be.
It's been fascinating to watch, Tom, and I must admit, I feel old when I watch it.
Yeah.
Because guys who are in their 30s are telling me, yeah, I don't remember him playing. You know?
Yeah, I do. It's funny
to
say that.
That's the rough part.
There's times, I'm sure you guys deal with this as well. There's times where I find myself doing the math, and I was never great at math to begin with. My verbal scores were always much higher on the SATs. But sometimes I start adding it up, and I'm like, yeah, okay, 92 and 8 gets to 2. That's 28 years ago?
Yeah.
Where in the hell did the time go?
So, yes.
Yeah, and I think that's what I've really been fascinated by in all of this, Jeff and Andy, is that this has allowed a generation, you know, I'll include my son, who's 22 and as diehard a LeBron fan as you can find, only because he kind of grew up with him here as we all did. But this is giving a generation a chance to look back at a player that we've long regarded as, you know, one or 1A in the pecking order of the pantheon of great players. So to me, that's, you know, as much as anything with this documentary, and obviously it's filled in some time in all of our schedules, but it's also allowed us to look back at a great time for basketball. And, you know, I've also gotten a kick out of being a music fan. I've loved some of the soundtrack of some of those, you know, rap and hip-hop songs of the late 80s and early 90s. That was kind of the soundtrack of our lives back then.
Yeah, I was waiting for my Adidas to start playing after he said he would have picked Adidas. Tom, I do want to switch gears on some other stuff that's going on right now. First of all, kind of a shot in the arm, I think, for everybody to watch Korean baseball start yesterday. Your thoughts on that? I think we're all watching that like a hawk to see how they're doing
if
that's going to translate.
Like you said, Andy, I mean, at least it's baseball, right? And whether you know these guys or not, but I think it is, to your point, I think it is a step in the right direction. You know, I've been, like everyone, I've been trying to look down the tunnel and find that light. And, you know, maybe this is a little bit of a glimmer. Maybe this is a chance to at least see sports begin somewhere else. And I still think we're a long ways away from, you know, seeing games, especially with fans in the stands. You know, I somebody pointed out to me that I guess the Miami Dolphins came up with something yesterday, some kind of a plan in which they would have 15,000 fans inside their 65,000-seat stadium. So, you know, people are trying to make plans. So, hey, at least there's some baseball on. We can all at least take a peek at that. We're not going to know many of the names. I'm sure we're all going to end up adopting some of these Korean teams maybe as our favorites. But at least, you know, like you said, it's a little bit of a glimmer. It's a little bit of a flicker. You know, you hope that as we see states around the country reopening slowly, that we don't start to see, you know, rises in death tolls and new cases, et cetera. So, again, it's at least a little bit of a flicker in the darkness.
You ready for football? Let's really look ahead. Tom, do you think football can return and just start up as normal?
I don't, Jeff. I just can't see it right now. You know, I think college football, I think, is the one that's really in danger, especially when you have to consider about getting kids back onto campus. And I know there are some schools that are kicking around the ideas of maybe just bringing in their freshman class to be on campus and have everyone else do their classes online, which is just hard to get my head around at this point. In terms of the NFL, you know, I'm glad to see that they're going ahead and putting the schedule out there just because it gives people something else to think about and some optimism and you know, something to put on your calendar and maybe, you know, circle for brighter and better days ahead. But I'm just still in doubt. I don't see where, until we have, you know, the mandated testing across the country where you're going to be able to put large groups of people together, whether that's a team or you know, fans or whatever. I don't see, you know, training camps happening anytime soon. Again, a lot of this could change if suddenly, you know, they either come up with the proper treatment or a vaccine, but I think that's still a long way off. Part of me, guys, over the last week or so has been thinking that, you know what, maybe it's time we just scrap 2020 and start thinking about salvaging 2021 from a sports standpoint. You know, as much as I'd like to see the NBA and the NHL complete those seasons, I don't see it happening at this point.
Let me throw one other hypothetical at you. Let's say the NFL feels like, and people feel like the NFL will have a season coming up, and college sports, I mean, I just don't know how college sports can exist without college football next
right.
year, even if they play it in the spring. But that also leads to other questions, like why would you want to play in the spring, and then it gets in the draft. But, you know, I read a story the other day that said you might see a big group of college kids right now apply for the supplemental draft if it looks like we're
right,
not
no
going
season.
To see. Wow. Yeah, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's you know, that's something that I didn't even really consider, but that makes perfect sense. You know, I hope people just don't get too far ahead of. Like, listen, it's about our health first and foremost, and
right.
you know, sports are secondary. And as I said to you guys a couple weeks ago, you know, sports have never felt as trivial and as important to me. And so I just hope we continue to listen to the science. And we make smart and wise decisions based on that. And so, listen, if I was a kid and I, you know, was about to be a senior at Ohio State or whatever, and I had dreams of playing in the NFL, you know, I'd have to consider that as well, Andy. But I, you know, as you said before, you know, you said it was a hypothetical question. I mean, we're living a hypothetical life now on an hour-to-hour basis.
It's true. Tom, last question for you really quick. How's your family? Everybody okay?
Everybody's great. Yeah, thank you for asking. We had an interesting day yesterday. My son is graduating from Kent State on Saturday, and so, you know, this was supposed to be a pretty remarkable week down on campus with the 50th anniversary of the Kent State shootings in 1970. So TJ and I went down to campus yesterday, and it was very solemn, but I was really glad that I went, and there were a number of people down there commemorating the day, but we're all doing well, you know, kind of, you know, staying busy. You know, while there's not games to cover, there's still enough going on in the sports world, as you guys know, to keep us at least somewhat busy, and Mrs. Withers has gone back to work at least on a part-time basis, so things are good. I hope you guys are doing well as well.
All right. Thank you, Tom. We always appreciate you, and we all know it's not news till Tom Withers says so. Thank you,
Thanks
Tom.
Thanks for having me, boys. We'll see you soon.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.